page. Listeners at home, we have a new setup, y'all. We have the world's cutest, tiniest little mixer. We have two microphones. We are moving on up. That's what we're doing with Page and Pixel Podcast. I want to thank, I want to shout out a huge thank you to our adoring fans who sent really helpful, honestly, very helpful feedback about the sound situation. We are correcting it, but keep that feedback coming because we are so new to this. We're noobs with boobs. That's what we are. And we could use all the help that we can get. We want this to be as good as possible for you all, but we're really excited about our new setup and we hope you are too. I'm Pixel.
I'm Paige.
And today is a book episode.
Heck yeah, it is.
So without any further ado, take it away, Paige.
All right. So today we are going to be talking about the book American Rapture by C.J. Lead. I do really quick want to give a bit of a content warning. I know we're cool with spoilers and stuff, but I am going to be talking about religious trauma, purity culture stuff, sexual assault, and a small mention of the death of an animal. So if any of that stuff upsets you, most of it is going to take place after my broad plot description. So after that, if you want to like skip ahead a little bit, you should feel free to do that because I don't want anyone to be getting upset. That's not what we're here for. We're here for fun. Anyway, so this book is, I kid you not, COVID-19, but make it a sex zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. Okay. So like I have not read this book. I did a quick Google. I read like a paragraph description and honestly, part of me was like, shit, I would actually read this book.
I know. I'm a little bit bummed that I'm going to spoil this all for you because you might actually like this book.
But this is what I signed up for. This is the cross that I bear for you, Paige. And also, like, I could still read it. And also, I read like 25 books a year. And if I don't know, I'm at peace in my heart with what we're about to do tonight.
Oh, good.
Spoil it for me. Awesome. I can take it.
Sweet. So okay. So the book starts. We're following our main character. Her name is Sophie. She's 16, and she is so Catholic.
Nice.
She goes to a private Catholic school, mass every Sunday. Like, she is not, like, she doesn't, you know, dislike her religion. Like, she is bought in on this religion herself. This isn't just something her parents make her do. She's super sheltered. Like, at one point, somebody was calling one of the other characters talking about how they're indigenous, but called them an Indian. And she was like, I don't know what that is. And I'm just like, oh my God, are you stupid? Anyway, so sheltered. But so she's kind of like vaguely aware that there's a flu virus going around, but like nobody in her life really talks about it. She lives in a super small community. Everybody in the community goes to her Catholic church. All the kids go to the same school. It's like, it is closed off, mm-hmm. nothing mm-hmm. in, nothing out mm-hmm. type of thing. So they basically tell her not to worry about it. She has a twin brother, and eventually we find out that he has been taken to some kind of facility reform school thing because he had a magazine with gay guys in it, and that's a big no-no. So he was sent away, to a facility, and she kind of feels responsible for it because, the reason why they woke up was because she was in his room and stuff like that. So she's feeling super guilty, thinks it's her fault that he has been taken away.
But also probably on some level agrees with the fact that it was wrong. And because she is so dialed in herself, there's probably some conflict there, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
As someone who myself came from a high control religion that was deeply homophobic, but also was a theater kid who had a lot of gay friends. Like, there was a lot of tension between, like, these are my friends and I love them dearly. This is what I've been taught. And if I don't believe it, I'm going to go to hell. It's very much like being ripped in half.
Yeah.
Really, the prom is a bibbity bobbity bitch. That's for sure.
So this is a super fun book about that.
I'm not triggered.
She's also dealing with some newfound desires that she has discovered in herself, which basically equate to she's just having normal teenage hormones, but nobody's talked to her about this, so they freak her out. And she meets a boy named Ben, and she like is like, I don't know why I'm feeling like I want to like touch him and kiss him and stuff. What is this? She doesn't understand, but it's super, super cute. So while the like intro of the book is happening, this virus is getting worse, and like she's catching like kind of like when they're in public, she'll hear a TV and she'll catch like a snippet, but we're not really getting the full picture until she starts hearing about a mutation of the virus that is being called Sylvia.
What a whore.
But she's told, don't worry about it, it's fine, it's just a virus, it's just the flu. Until she comes home from school one day and her parents are in the living room, like going at each other, but not in like a sexy way, in like a really gross, like, and they're like ripping at each other and like just like zombies, like they don't have a brain anymore. And it's like just this primal thing.
I feel like if I were to walk in on my parents, no matter how sensual and loving an encounter it is, my brain is going to filter it such that it looks like two zombies eating each other because of the layers of trauma. But I hear you saying, but then
it's not just that, because then when she walks in, they turn, see her, and they're like, get her. And so she has to fight her parents off of her.
When you say get her, just for food or? Oh, no.
No. Like, that is what we find out later, that is what this virus does. That's what this mutation does. The virus started as just like a really bad flu. Most people would get over it. And then this mutation, and I remember somewhere in the book, they talk about how it is kind of like behaving similarly to syphilis. For some reason.
Does syphilis make you extra horny? Because that would make sense as an STD. Like, viruses are good at making you do the things that will pass on the virus.
So it like attacks the brain in some way that makes it like it shuts down everything else except for this area that is like lust, sex, desire.
You're a lizard brain. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, essentially. So that's super fun.
Any doctor listeners out there, can you tell us about, does syphilis make you want to rub it up on everyone and everything?
Maybe not. So she is able to fight them off. She stabs her dad with a crucifix at some point. It's like a super cool, like, this is the beginning of the death of her belief system, and it's great. So she gets in the family car. She has her license, but she like really doesn't know how to drive, but she's like, I don't care. So she just books it on out of there. At some point she gets stuck in traffic, and another guy who has the virus gets out and starts attacking people on the highway. Super traumatizing. After that, she gets picked up by some cops, and through some events, she ends up picking up some more people. So she picks up this cop. His name is Morrow. They find a dog at one point, and I forgot to look it up how you pronounce it, but it's Barghest, which I learned is, I can't remember what mythology, but basically it's like from mythology, and it's like a symbol that like death is near.
Like the black dog thing. Yes. That's in a lot of cultures.
Yes. So it's this big black dog, but like he ends up being like super protective and stuff, and like they really grow very close, her and this dog.
Listen, if there's dick out zombies, I'm gonna want a big black dog on my side.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. So then they get to her main mission right now is she needs to find her brother, because her brother is in this facility. She doesn't know what's happening to him. She can't get in contact with him, and so that's kind of her motivation throughout the book, is needing to find her brother. And she doesn't know where he's at because they're moving him around, taking him out of this place, sending him to a hospital, sending him here and there, and she can't find him. So they end up at a, it's like a shelter, like they turned a school into a shelter and like a vaccine clinic. And this is where they find out, they found out it behaves like syphilis, and that's how they were able to get a vaccine, was they just like kind of like science stuff. I don't
know. Sci-fi plot.
Yeah. Things. Those things.
Yeah, sure.
So there's a vaccine. And so she gets the vaccine while she's there, but they find out it's really only like 50% effective. So it's not a great thing, but you know, better than nothing, better than, I guess.
Yeah, that's 50% better than 0%.
So while they're there, they pick up, by some happenstance, her crush Ben ends up there.
He has to.
Obviously. So Ben is there. They also meet a girl that's about their age named Helen. An older woman, like an adult woman named Cleo. And like a little boy named Wyatt.
Taking all my strength to not whip out my Miss Cleo, but we don't do that anymore. Pixel, we don't do that anymore. We don't do Miss Cleo voices.
Yeah,
I'm so sorry.
That.
Continue. That was an intrusive thought that
go ahead. So they're eventually going to go on a journey through Wisconsin. This place, it takes place in Wisconsin. It's super great. There's like a Culver's reference at one point. I was like, Jesus Christ. So good. At one point they are at like a cheese castle where, you know, it's like one of those cheese places. They visit the infamous, I don't know if you've heard of it, the House on the Rock that's in. Okay. I'm going to talk more about it later. Okay. And then they eventually end up at a casino that turns into a shelter. So part of the reason why they are having to keep moving is because it's not just the virus that is kind of the, antagonist, I guess you could say. There's also a group of people who are basically in religious psychosis because their leader has told them that the reason this virus is happening and why it's mostly prevalent in America is because God is coming to judge America for living in sin and debauchery and all that stuff.
The
obviously
thing that Pat Robertson would say after every time anything went bad, except that fucker's dead now, so he can't.
Yeah. So basically, there is this group of people, they dress up in robes, and they call themselves the Crusaders, and they're going around and they're destroying, yeah.
What a callback.
Yeah. they're going around and, like, destroying all of these shelters and vaccine centers because they don't want anyone getting the vaccine.
God's judgment.
The God's will is for if you get this virus, you did something wrong and you need to die because that is God's will. He's judging you.
That's why we didn't do AIDS research for like a decade.
Yeah. So there's a lot piled in here. At the climax of the book, when they're at the casino, which has been turned into a shelter and vaccine center to the Crusaders, they come and attack the casino and try to light it on fire. And nobody else makes it out, but Sophie and Ben, everyone else, has died.
Ooh.
Which is, I was super sad, but like the more I thought about it, and I'll get to it later, like it makes sense and I understand why that happened. So she's still trying to find her brother, and I just read this book, but sometimes I forget details of books that I just read. Somehow she finds out where they have taken all of the kids who were at her brother's facility.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to go there, and they get there, and it's like this big, it's called Holy Hill. It's like a place where people go and like it's supposed to be sacred, and that's where they go and get their holy water and all this
stuff.
Okay,
kind of like a shrine.
Yeah.
Situation.
Yeah, that type of thing. But when they get there, everyone who was there, because they were like, hey, anybody who wants to shelter can come here. You know, we're not going to turn anyone away. Well, when they get there, they find out that this virus has spread and everyone there has died.
Hmm.
So they go But they go through the dormitories and they're basically ransacking. Her and Ben are ransacking everything just to see if there's any sign. They get to the last bedroom and she finds a note from her brother talking about how, like, hey, you know, I've left notes everywhere we've been so that you can find me. You know, this is where we're going. And he gives like a cryptic kind of thing, like a cryptic message to like, come find me. And they end up figuring out, like, they're looking at a map and they figure out his thing. And so the book ends. Her and Ben are going to go to where her brother is. He's found refuge with an indigenous tribe up near Canada.
Is there a reason the note is cryptic? Or just fun plot movement?
I think that he doesn't want people, because he like escapes in the middle of the night. Like he doesn't just like leave. Like they don't let him leave. Like him and a friend of his are like planning an escape. So he like, if somebody found the note, he didn't want them to know where he went, because then they might come and
check. Because I'm assuming the dig out zombies aren't taking breaks to read notes. So there must be some fear of like other survivors, like maybe the cult. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, he doesn't want anybody finding him except, okay.
Yeah. And so during all of this, as like an added thing, those like fun hormones get like real crazy. And so this whole time she's attracted to the super hot older cop, which I'm a little annoyed that he had to be a cop. And I was like, but whatever. This boy who she's like, oh, I really like him and he likes me. And then she's also at some point, she's like, oh my gosh, I think I like Helen too. And she's like, doesn't understand that at all. She's like, oh yeah, my brother liked looking at pictures of boys. So maybe that's the same. But like, she has no frame of reference for this. Anyway. Sure. So
just being a teenage girl.
Yeah, basically. But to her, she like doesn't understand it. And so she's like, oh my God, I'm sick. I have this virus because right. She's terrified every time she feels it. And it's like, oh honey, no. You just have hormones.
That's such a powerful metaphor for like what purity culture does to the way you interpret your own body. It's like, there's something wrong with me. It's shameful. It's bad. Other people aren't like me. Like I'm sick. I'm wrong. Like that's.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What's next? Oh, my favorite moment.
Yeah.
I have like three moments that I want to talk about, and I couldn't really decide because I know it's like a favorite moment and then a moment that like made you angry, and I can't really, I don't know. I'm just going to talk about three separate moments that I want to highlight.
Yeah. Do whatever you want.
In the story.
I'm just giving suggestions for how to structure your thoughts. Feel free to.
So my,
disregard.
It's so fun. And I really need to bring this up because there's like a whole sequence where they're at this house. It's called the House on the Rock. Apparently it's a big thing in Wisconsin. If you listen to us and you're from Wisconsin and you know what it is, let me know.
Send us a picture.
I did look it up because I wanted to know what it looks like. Basically, it's this guy who like wanted to build a house based off of Frank Lloyd Wright, but he didn't really do it right. So it's like a little bit off. And now it's like filled with weird stuff. It's kind of like a museum and also like collections, but like, it's just like a weird house. There's a huge carousel with creepy carousel things and dolls. Like it's crazy. So that it's just a really fun. And like, I stopped and I looked it up and I'm like looking at it and I'm like, oh my gosh, they do tours. They're closed for the winter, but they open in the spring. We should totally do Page and Pixel on the road. It's only like 3-ish hours.
That's nothing.
Yeah.
We're in the Midwest.
Yeah. That's driving. That could be a day trip in the Midwest. That's a day trip. But just a lot of goofy things happen, but like a lot of big things. That's when she like kind of realizes like, oh, I think I might have feelings for Helen, but they're in the refrigerator and there's a bunch of melted butter sculptures and they slip in like a giant puddle of melted butter. It's super
fun.
The
most Wisconsin meat cute I can possibly.
Exactly. But yeah, so that's why I wanted to bring that up, because Page and Pixel on the road is totally going to be a thing.
Yes.
The next thing that I want to talk about is a part at the beginning of the book. And this is one of the ones that more so like it just made me angry, and it was supposed to. because it's like basically a story of how purity culture distorts women's thoughts. So at the beginning of the book, Sophie's mom takes her to the mall because she wants to buy her some new clothes. And while they're there, she like decides like, now's the time I have to have this heart to heart with my daughter. Yeah, so great. So she is, her mom decides to tell her like, oh, like I haven't always been this way. I had like a wild streak in college where I got really loose with my clothing and stuff. And all I'm thinking is like, oh, she wore cutoffs above her knees. Like, oh, so tantalizing, but whatever. Anyway, so she's telling her about how during the summer she was staying with a family friend, so she didn't have to go home. She had like a summer internship or something. I don't know. And so she's, you know, dressing unmodestly and ooh. And so one night she comes home and the husband of this family literally takes her to their barn and assaults her.
And she's framing it as this was my fault because.
Yes. And she tells her daughter, you know, but I went, you know, right after that, I realized like I had done this wrong. And so I switched my major to religious studies and I started volunteering at the church. And that's where I met your dad. And he's just so wonderful because he forgave me for the sins that I have committed. And then basically tells her the whole like, you know, virginity is a woman's greatest gift that she can give her husband, and tells her, I think she apologizes and says, I'm so sorry that you look so much like me, that you're so beautiful, because this is a burden you have to bear.
And I know, like, listeners, I know, or I hope I know that you already know this, but like, if anything like that has ever happened to you, it is 0% your fault. Like the only consequences for like not wearing enough clothes is like maybe you're too cold. Right. And like that's it. It's just there's no reason for you to carry somebody else's shame. Just like you can let that shit go. I know it's hard. I know it takes a long, long time. But like, please, please, please know your worth, and that it has absolutely nothing to do with what anyone has done to you, or what you've done with anyone consensually, whatever. You're great. You're a fan of the show, so you're extra great.
Oh my God, I'm pushing my mic around.
Yeah, we're getting out. We're good. You can't just knock the mics around. There's a new mic.
You mean I can't throw this thing? Anyway, so the last part, I guess this one also kind of made me like want to throw my book across the room, but in like another like, oh, this is kind of the point. So at the climax of the book, climax.
Wow, at the book's orgasm.
Anyway, basically, they are at this casino and the Crusaders have attacked the casino. Her and Ben get separated from everyone else. Ben and Bargess, the dog, are all together, and then everyone else has gotten separated and they are like fighting their way to get out. They've set the casino on fire, and she finally gets outside and she looks and she sees Cleo, because Cleo likes to wear like bright clothing. And so she sees Cleo. And then she sees Wyatt, the little boy. Wyatt has had his throat slit open.
Oh.
He is already gone. And Cleo dies in Sophie's arms, which is awful. And so they get, but she's got to go.
Right. Because
they're going to find her. So she runs into the woods. They attack her and Bargest, douse them in gasoline and set the dog on fire. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awful, awful, disgusting, despicable stuff. And so she is like trying to like help Bargest, and another, the guy comes and he tries to attack her, and she's like trying to fight him off, and she's asking him, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? What he says is, God's will always prevails. Like, that's what he says. It's God's will always prevails. And Sophie takes that in, and she's thinking in her head, she's like, what would Jesus do? And then she stops and she goes, what would Cleo do? And I just thought that that was a really cool moment of character development. And she ends up saying, there's no way in hell that this is God's will.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I just, this moment, it just made me stop and think, because like, I was just like overwhelmed by the fact that they would do that to a little boy. And then I stopped and I thought, and I was like, there's nothing. If you think that it is God's will for you to cleanse the earth of quote unquote sinners, there's nothing you won't do. Right. You'll light a dog on fire. Right. You'll slit the throat of a 7-year-old boy. You don't care. Those people are evil.
Mm-hmm.
And they deserve to die. It doesn't matter who they are. Right. And like, it's just like insane. But like, realizing that Sophie is able to stop and go like, no, that's total bullshit.
Yeah.
There's no possible way that that is how God is supposed to work.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it is, like, let me get myself the furthest away from that as I possibly can.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, she kind of realizes too, like, she thinks back and she's like, I've seen my nuns carrying around red cloaks and like trying to hide them. She realizes people in her community are a part of this. Yeah. And she's like, oh my God, these little old nuns
are wearing red hats. I mean, red cloaks. So sorry. Not the red hats. To the 3 fans I just offended.
Get out of here. You can go away. If you like those red hats, we don't want you listening to our show anyway, so it's fine. Now I'm going to tell you about my favorite.
Your crush? Or is it just favorite?
Favorite character and crush a little bit. I have 2 favorite characters, though. One I have a crush on. The other one is the boy, Ben, who is a 16-year-old boy, so I don't have a crush on him.
Okay. For legal reasons, you don't have
many reasons. I felt like they were both just like super instrumental to Sophie's growth. I felt like Ben understood her and accepted her as she was, but also wasn't afraid to push back and be like, okay, but do you really think that? Or like, this is what I believe, and it's okay if you don't believe that, but I'm just letting you know, like, you have the option to believe some. So just like very like, good at understanding how to help someone who is doubting their faith, and you know, just was really good at it.
Religiously traumatized people need those people in their lives that are like walking like a half a step in front of them, like with them, close to them, supportive of them, but also like challenging and like nudging a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then like giving her space to figure it out on her own.
Yes.
And not trying to tell her like,
yes,
no, you're wrong, this is what you need to believe. Like, just super good for like a teenage boy, but you know, that's
maybe too good, maybe unrealistic,
maybe a little unrealistic, but that's okay. That's okay. So the person I have a crush on is Cleo. Cleo is the coolest freaking person on the face of the planet. She dresses in like these bright red pants and like jewelry and just like doesn't care. And there's a scene where she's got 2 guns and she's firing them both out the back of a school bus.
Whoa.
Like, maybe they were in the car at that point. Anyway, she's holding 2 a gun in each hand and pew, 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 and zombies. Like,
that's not recommended gun safety practice.
No. But in the zombie apocalypse in a fiction book.
I feel like one with better aim. You know what? We're not going
to
go.
Everyone else was injured. She had to. She had no choice.
She could holster. You know what? I'm on your side. I'm putting it away.
But she's accurate. That's the thing about fiction, is that she can be the greatest shot ever, and she got all those zombies
hands at the same time.
Exactly.
Wow.
So super cool. But she's also, she kind of ends up becoming a little bit of like, I wouldn't say a mother figure, but maybe like a cool aunt figure, where she's like always giving her advice. And one of my favorite quotes in the whole book is from her, and I want to read it because I just really like it as someone who also grew up in religion and was always afraid of like demon possession and stuff. So this is what she says. She says, "You want to know why I think possession scares you? It's the same reason they want it to, because on some level you feel that you've already given up your free will. God and Jesus and the devil and angels and demons have already infiltrated your thoughts, your whole being. The church has. They make us so afraid of possession, of doing wrong and being wrong, because they don't want us to see that they've done it to us already. That fear, guilt, and shame, that has possessed you your entire life, and they put it there. Now tell me who's the one who deserves to go to hell."
That is so fucking good and insightful, because like, that's absolutely true. Like, your will is already not your own.
Yes.
That's too long for a bumper sticker.
Yeah.
Maybe it could fit on a t-shirt.
I don't know, but I'm going to keep it in my heart for the rest of my
life. Cross stitch. Like a little cross stitch sign for on the wall.
That's still a lot. We'll figure it out. I'll figure out some way. It's so good. I just loved Cleo. I loved her character, and like, it broke my heart to like see that she died. But like, that is another thing, is like, it didn't matter how that she was wise and kind and full of life. She was not believing the right things, and so she was evil and deserved to die. And that's just an awful way to think about other people. That people just deserve to die because they don't do what you want the way that you want it, or they don't listen to you, or they don't follow your instructions the right way, or they don't comply, or something like that.
Yeah. In my downtime, I've been reading Brave New World, because that seems like the thing to do in the year of our Lord 2026.
Okay.
And like, so much of it is about like creating monocultures and making sure like everyone's in their place, and like they're kind of like clones, and they're all the same, and they think the same, and they act the same. But like, in the real world, in nature, like, monocultures are bad. Like, when you have environments where everything is the same, then everyone is susceptible to the same shit. Like, you need, like, diversity is a means of survival. Like, not, it's great and beautiful, but like, at, in a most functional, like, cold level, you need people who are not like you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need people to be able to challenge your beliefs, even if you don't end up changing your beliefs. Stopping and thinking about what you believe and why you believe it is a good thing to do.
Because if it's true or valuable, it will hold up. And if it doesn't, why the fuck were you holding on to it in the first place? What's the value?
Let that shit go.
Yes.
Let that shit go. Yeah. So, yeah. Overall, I absolutely loved this book. I could have done without the hot cop, but, you know, whatever.
Some people really love a person in uniform.
Yeah, it was, like, just very... I wish she would have at least, like, even in, like, a lazy way, said, like, you know, he's like, yeah, I know there's a lot of, you know, bad people who do my job, but, like, I just wanted to do it. Because he, like, gets into it because he wants to, like, honor his sister who died when he was like a teenager and stuff like that. And so like, he wants to like help people, and he feels like he needs to like atone for not taking care of her and not being there to protect her. So like I get it, but like the fact that there was no mention of the like reason why cops have the authority they do and how they abuse that authority, I was like, there could have been something. There could have been a discussion.
Yeah.
About it, at least.
Or it could have been a hot park ranger, because nobody's mad at the park ranger.
But then why is the park ranger picking up people on the highway?
Because they're helpful people.
True. He was just being helpful. He could have been a park ranger. You're right.
We stand a hot park ranger.
Yes, we love a park ranger.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. But I just really, I felt like the pacing of the story was perfect. It wasn't going too fast, but it didn't like drag on. I feel like the ups and the downs were really consistent. A lot of just really good classic zombie horror, which zombie horror is like my favorite. I love a good zombie movie or a good zombie show or whatever. I really liked that, but I also liked that this was like a first person telling. So we still only saw the world through the eyes of an incredibly sheltered 16-year-old girl who didn't really know what was going on. And so there were times where you're like, I don't know what's going on. Oh, wait, it's because she doesn't know either. And she's so confused. And I think she maybe is having a bit of like religious psychosis at one point. Like when they're at the house on the rock, she's like running through this maze and she hears a heartbeat and stuff like that. So, like, I think, but like, she is like, does not know what is going on. And so, like, I felt like that was like a really good. I don't know. I liked that point of view, and I felt like the characters were all very consistent. They all acted within their, like, I don't know. Everything just was very, like, thought out, and it was just done really well. It was a really good book. I ended up giving it a, I think I gave it a 4 out of 5 again, because I cannot stand a police officer. I'm so sorry, because he was like seriously the best person in the book, and I was like, just not believable. I
Propaganda.
don't like the propaganda, but that's okay. Overall, it had a lot of really good messaging. It gave me a lot to think about. It definitely, I annotated it, and it was like, I'm trying to annotate one book a month, and I specifically had a color, a tab color, just for like purity culture and like religious stuff. Like, I used that up
Oh, I'm
so
sure.
fast. I
I'm
was
sure.
like, oh, I've got so many tabs left, but my religion and purity culture tab is gone. So it was obviously not fun to revisit those things, but in a way, it was kind of like, oh, yeah, no, I remember that. I remember the rose analogy. I remember, not giving away your greatest gift.
You don't
And
want to be a half-eaten chocolate bar. What man would want a half-eaten chocolate? No,
here's
left
the
in
thing.
there.
If I handed my husband a half-eaten chocolate bar, he would eat it.
Also, like,
So what kind of analogy is that?
virginity is not a consumable good. Like, it doesn't go away. I mean, it's not, first of all, it's like a made-up thing that
It's like a
has to involve a penis. It's a
construct.
whole, it's a construct. It's ridiculous. And like, personally, I think my husband appreciated that I had some skills when I met him. I wasn't on training wheels. I'd been around a few blocks.
Yeah,
Well, I'll ask David.
but you were married before
Yeah.
him though. So like I feel like for the Christians that's different. Oh, but you're divorced. He didn't die, so
I'm
that's
divorced, and
not
I
good.
didn't like wait the
Oh,
second
okay.
time
Oh, okay. I see.
around.
That's
I
fine.
said
I
I
don't
knew
care.
he existed for 5 months, and we were living together.
Oh, yeah, you did say that.
So I did, by full disclosure, I was in purity culture hard when I was younger. I waited to have sex with my first husband until we were married. Would never have married him if I hadn't. So these things do
That's rough.
happen. We learn and we grow, but like, listen, the Lord sent scouts into the promised land. Ain't nothing wrong with knowing. Listen, we can make it say whatever we want it to say. Listen, if the bad people can make it say whatever they want it to say,
But
we
that
can
makes
make it
us
say
as bad
something
as the
fun.
bad people, doesn't it?
I feel like if your heart's in the
Shouldn't
right
we be more
So
concerned with
anyway, find us on
purity?
Instagram at Page and Pixel
PC.
PC.
Yep.
Are we? Oh, can we test out our new sign off?
Yeah, let's which
I
one who
got it. I
goes
got it.
first?
You go first.
So read hard
Play hard and
and
fuck
fuck ice.
ice. See you later, lovelies.